Off the Ball Breakfast.
It's the thing Hamer always said, when I took on this Ireland gig, the one thing I could be sure about was there's going to be a bit of dog in them. Then I realised there was no dog in them.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. And a great few hours coming your way on the show tonight. We're going to be kicking things off from 7:30 with Brian Dowling, who is Kildare Senior Hurling Manager. They were, of course, crowned Joe McDonagh Champions last Sunday. And they play a preliminary quarter-final against the Dubs this weekend before playing in the Leinster Championship proper next season. So exciting times for Kildare Hurling and Brian Dowling up at 7:30. After 8 o'clock then, Brian O'Driscoll is going to join us here in studio. Leinster, of course, in the URC final this weekend against the Bulls, and it is their last game of the season, so loads to discuss with Brian. And then after 9 o'clock, we're going to be playing you some Jarlath Burns, who's been speaking today at Faithful Fields down in Offaly, and we'll chat to Tommy Rooney around it, because the idea of the All-Ireland being pushed back to August in 2027 has reared its head, and he's had his say on replays and penalties as well. So loads to discuss throughout the evening. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to get in touch on any subject at all. And throughout the show, we'll be keeping you up to speed on everything that happens at the Stade de Luxembourg. Our own Nathan Murphy is there alongside Dan MacDonald, football correspondent with the Irish Independent. Nathan, we might kick things off with yourself. First of all, you might bring us the team news this evening.
Yeah, five changes from the side that drew with Senegal. There is a Republic of Ireland debut for Max O'Leary of Bristol City in goal, and I think you'd have to say well-deserved. It's going on 6 years since he was first in and around the Republic of Ireland squad, and tonight, finally, he's going to get to play for his country, and he's going to do so from the start in place of Caoimhín Kelleher. There's also a first international start for Killian Phillips in midfield. Obviously came on, made a cameo on Friday night. They clearly like what they've seen from him in training, so he's going to come in midfield. Jake O'Brien replaces Matt Doherty in the defence, while also up top, as we expected, Evan Ferguson and Troy Parrott come in. So Kelleher, Manning, Doherty, Taylor and Ida are the players that drop out. We expect it'll be Max O'Leary in goal, Jake O'Brien at right back with Nathan Collins, Darrow Shea in the centre, and then Robbie Brady at left back, Killian Phillips and Jason Knight in midfield, Casey McAteer and Will Smallbone on the wings, and then Evan Ferguson just in behind just in behind Troy Parrott, I should say.
Very good, Dan McDonald, a very good evening to you. I think when we think about this fixture, and I know it wasn't an exact mirror image of what happened, but we think of the 27th of March 2021 when Luxembourg came to Dublin and won 1-0. It feels like it's the most scarring of defeats that the Republic of Ireland have suffered in recent times.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just one of those things. It's the one word, Luxembourg, and it probably brings people back to that moment. Although, again, it was probably... Is that even more pronounced because nobody was in the stadium and everyone was like, it was a TV event at that time, and I don't know, just a very sort of dark moment in a lot of ways. And even though this venue here sort of brings back some memories, some positive memories for some of the players of the 3-0 win, what, sort of 8 months later, I think Luxembourg still, there's that uncomfortable feeling when you hear the name.
Yeah, it's weird how it was, as you say, 6 months later, a 3-0 win for the Republic of Ireland that night. And it just seems so forgotten compared to the loss in Dublin.
I think Owen, that the loss in Dublin was maybe a realisation of the new reality of where Irish football is, because Luxembourg were simply a country that we would not lose to. We'd beaten them every time we'd beaten them previously. I think we looked at them among those sort of minnows who'd be the lowest seed in your group, and you know, it's a handy 6 points over the group, and we wondered, was this just a one-off, or was this something deeper? And I think probably what the next 2 or 3 years proved was that it was something much, much deeper. Luxembourg have clearly improved. You know, one of the players who played that night went and scored against Real Madrid a week later in the Champions League, and we had nobody playing in the Champions League. But I think it feels as though things have turned around somewhat since then.
Yeah, I think the strange thing is, I mean, that game in November was that weird, probably nearly the highest point of Stephen Kenny's time, where we had the post-match press conference afterwards here, and like fans were maniacally banging on the window, like cheering Stephen Kenny's name. Ogbene scored, Jason Knight come off the bench, was brilliant. And it almost felt like the demons of Luxembourg had been banished then. And of course that wasn't the case, because once Ireland then went in the next campaign and dropped points in Armenia, lost in Armenia, it almost got added to the rap sheet at which Luxembourg is the starting point. So I guess in some respects, yeah, that was. I mean, I remember that night Jonathan Hill was like, then CEO, was tweeting about this was very good, and this was the sign that Stephen Kenny was going to get his new contract. So it was almost like a sort of mirage in the desert, like the trip to Luxembourg here, relative to what followed afterwards.
Yeah, for sure. And even when you look at the goal scorers that night for Ireland and the win, the likes of Shane Duffy, Chidozie Ogbene and Callum Robinson, various different reasons, obviously none of them available tonight, and it's kind of a new era, and obviously we kind of await for the likes of Ogbene to come back to full fitness. But in terms of those that are available tonight and those that are starting, Dan, I mean, this is another great moment for Killian Phillips. Anybody who saw his post-match interview on Friday immediately roots for the guy, I think. But I guess really interestingly, from a future perspective here, is just that partnership up front again of Evan Ferguson and Troy Parrott. We're still trying to figure out, if everybody's fit, who exactly Hamer is going to favour up front, because Adam Eda is obviously in that conversation.
Yeah, I think, you know, you hear five changes and you think that this is maybe, like, this is massively experimental, but in some respects this feels like closer, in some ways closer to a strongest team when you look at the attacking areas. It feels more familiar that the experiment on Friday was maybe trying Jack Taylor behind Adam Eda. And I know Max O'Leary's in and goals for Kelleher, and that's just O'Leary getting his time. But Jake O'Brien in place of Matt Doherty, I mean, at Matt Doherty's age, like, this may be closer to, in the coming years, you could have a back four with Jake O'Brien and Dara O'Shea and Nathan Collins in it. So you add in sort of Ferguson and Parrott up top, and it feels like maybe this is the guts of a team you could see. And yeah, in terms of the alliance between Ferguson and Parrott, certainly in March, you know, Ferguson was very much the deeper player, like the deeper operator. Parrott was very much the number nine leading the line, whereas previously at under 21 level, Parrott at times was a number 10. So I think that's one of the dynamics you're looking at tonight, just the actual roles that they play.
Yeah, we were talking as well last Friday, Nathan, about whether or not it was controversial that Jake O'Brien would be left out. Is this a head-to-head essentially between himself and Matt Doherty to become first choice right back, or do you think Doherty still very much has the edge?
Oh, long term, I think it is, but actually I think what we're seeing tonight is probably what we'll see in September, where Matt Doherty will start against Hungary and Jake O'Brien could well then end up coming in against Armenia, and maybe likewise with Evan Ferguson, where you wouldn't be surprised if Finn Azaz started in that role, yeah, in the tougher game against Hungary. As Dan said, Parrott, it feels like now, is the first choice number nine, the one who's furthest forward. And even thinking back to March, Evan Ferguson gets that brilliant goal to bring Ireland level, but he was actually on the verge of being taken off just before, and it hadn't really worked between the two of them. There were a few little moments as a partnership, but I think I'd still be surprised if those two started the first game against Hungary if Finn Azaz is available. But look, Jake O'Brien long term, and listen, there's a possibility maybe Jake O'Brien starts centre back tonight and
Darrell O'Shea
plays at right back. Personally, I'd love to see Collins and O'Shea given a run of games together, but last time against Bulgaria, O'Shea was on the bench and O'Brien came in and played at centre back alongside Nathan Collins, so there is that possibility as well. And I think they love Darrell O'Shea's passing ability and his ability to get the wingers into it, as we saw when he was playing on the left of the back two the last night. He was so good at getting Casey McAteer into it, so maybe they might try something different tonight.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we were allowed to watch all of training yesterday, which is quite unusual. And look, there was a long period of time. There was a sort of a passing drill that involved, like, the right back sending a long crossfield ball to sort of an advanced left back on the other side. And I would say Dara O'Shea's distribution might be better for that role than Jake O'Brien. Like, Dara O'Shea is very comfortable. So it wouldn't be a massive shock if we saw that tonight. Nathan, definitely is a possibility.
It's a very simplistic thing, but that ball is maybe one of the hallmarks of Halgrimsson so far. At the start of the campaign, they used it to really good effect to get Ogbene into games in really advanced position. It gets them forward quickly without having to commit a huge amount of numbers. in midfield so that they don't end up getting caught on the counter-attack, and so that Josh Cullen and Jason Knight or whoever it is, Killian Phillips tonight, can maybe hang that little bit deeper. So, you know, Daro Shea, I was very surprised when he didn't start the second leg against Bulgaria. I think it was maybe a bit of a knock or something night that might have ruled him out. But you look at that long-range passing, he certainly looks as though he is the pick of it of the centre-backs.
Dan, it's been interesting, without having any sort of massive win or any sort of upset, like you might have suggested that doing what they did against Bulgaria was what this team was expected to do, but that allied with maybe the positivity from Heimir Hallgrímsson has shifted the mood going into this summer and ahead of September, that things look a lot brighter around the camp. Is that just a facade, or are you seeing substance to back that up that would give Irish football fans real hope about what's to come in the autumn?
Yeah, look, I think I understand where the encouragement comes from. I mean, the group have had Nathan Collins reference yesterday how Wembley was a real low. That was the last game of last year for him. That was a little bit of a reset. They've gone away. They're three games unbeaten. They've tasted winning away from home in a competitive match. Yes, the opposition was pretty limited, but I think I understand the optimism, because collectively, I mean, this group of players, I mean, even the likes of Jason Knight, Troy Parrott, like, they're in the 20-30 caps bracket, but like in some cases they've maybe experienced one, maybe two major wins, you know. And I say major, like, you're talking Nations League games against Scotland and Bulgaria, you know. You're not exactly sort of racking up a list. I mean, some honourable draws along the way. So I think when you've had so little experience of that, to go away from a camp not trying to put the positives on a defeat, there's a natural thing. I think there obviously are signs of a sort of a bit of a tactical identity taking shape, that going, I think in Hallgrímsson's first six games, there was a lot of changes from game to game. I think it was quite hard to predict the starting team and what you might see. I think now, even with the changes of personnel, it feels like you have an idea about the identity. So these are all the positive signs. I think, look, the obvious counterpoint and the asterisk to that is that, you know, in the autumn when they played decent teams, they obviously got popped, and, you know, it was an understrength Senegal side on Friday. So you're not playing against the team with the level. Even for Hungary maybe being a little bit on the downgrade, it's a competitive game, and the intensity of a competitive game, and that's the obvious question mark. But you just hope that this team, if they encounter some difficult times in the first 15, 20, 25 minutes in September against Hungary, that they have an idea how to get out of it, because they know what they are, and that's the hope. But I understand any caution and the optimism. I don't think there's any basis for euphoria or declaring the corner has been turned, but I guess the bar has been so low for optimism that you understand why they're seizing on this mini unbeaten run as something to cling on to.
Nathan, Gerson Rodriguez starts for Luxembourg tonight.
Yeah, he does, and it'll be interesting to see if there's any protests against that. It dominated the press conference yesterday on the Luxembourg side of things for Luke Holtz. Gerson Rodriguez scored the goal that night in Dublin that gave Luxembourg the victory, but very controversial figure now. A suspended 18-month sentence for assaulting his girlfriend and two other assaults as well. He appealed that. He's lost that, but Luke Holtz has decided to keep him involved. He has taken a lot of criticism for that, and also the FA have taken a lot of criticism for how they dealt with the protest that took place in the game against Slovenia 3-4 days ago. So we'll see if there's the same sort of heavy-handed response. You assume there won't be. Gerson Rodriguez is going to start. I would love to see the Republic of Ireland line out the way UEFA are expecting the Republic of Ireland to line out. They've got Troy Parrott at right back, Evan Ferguson in the middle of midfield, and a front two. They obviously think we're going right back to the 80s of Killian Phillips and Nathan Collins.
That's an identity now in the side.
Why not? Yeah. Why not? Where does what we're hearing at Stade de Luxembourg at the moment rank in terms of pre-match playlists, by the way?
Yeah, it's proper Europop, isn't it? I never mind what the music is, as long as it's at the appropriate level. And I think they're expecting, what, about 6,500 here tonight? So you don't need to be blaring it out. Listen, we've had a version of Hey Jude that I've never heard before, but I think about 360 Ireland supporters here. They look like they're all right at the moment.
All right, good stuff. Nathan Murphy, Dan McDonald, football correspondent with the Irish Independent. Thanks so much, folks. We'll be backing over to Nathan Murphy throughout the evening as he keeps us up to speed on Luxembourg versus the Republic of Ireland in that international friendly.
In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast, we had this.
It's not like when we were young lads, Colin, there was no computers, there was no digital devices, nothing to keep you inside in the house. But now the way it's gone, everything is to keep you inside your house. When we were young lads, you couldn't stay in the house, or you'd have to watch country practice or Everland Farm.
There's a retro reference.
So, you're waiting for home to away at 6:30.
And there was also some of this.
It's not a pity shift, right? Like it's
a pity shift.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Do you mean that by Irish?
Nobody's taking pity on it.
When was the last time you had a pity shift?
Rank your top 5 pity shifts there that you received.
It's this is a good hand in glove situation here.
Catch up now elsewhere on the Go Loud app. And every weekday morning when Off the Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.
Now, the news round is here with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. And we should say good evening for the first time to Mick McCarthy. Hello, Mick.
Hi, Owen.
And Cameron Hill, a very good evening to you.
Good evening, Owen.
Where do you want to kick things off with?
Well, let's start with comments from the GAA's president, Charlotte Burns, today. He's revealed that All-Ireland finals returning to August could be back for 2027. So the showpiece games are currently slated for July, of course, and Burns confirmed the concerts already scheduled for Croke Park next year means that a move to August in 2026 is not viable. He also expressed a preference for replays to decide drawn provincial finals rather than penalty shootouts on the day, as was the case in the Munster hurling final at the weekend, of course. Reports today suggest that provincial replays could be on the cards for October's special Congress. Now, Burns was speaking to media at the launch of the 2025 All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship today, and he says the scheduling of the All-Ireland finals is a recurring topic among the grassroots of the association.
I'm around the country all the time, in clubs and counties every single day of the week, and the thing that I get most debate on are the timings of the All-Ireland finals. Leaving everything as it is, okay, first and third weeks is August. Remember, the fact we're only playing 2 games next year in the round robin saves that week for the Allianz National League. You have 2 weeks then after that. That solves that problem. And then you have no dead rubbers in the round robin. Leave everything as it is and just have a bigger space between the semi-finals and the finals, 3 weeks instead of 2 weeks. That means then that there's only the 2 teams that are being affected. Now, the disadvantage of that is that you're into the bank holiday weekend, and that can create difficulty as well. But you might have heard me saying that this isn't going to happen during my presidency. The decision might be made during my presidency, but it mightn't actually occur during my presidency. But I am certainly open to first and third weeks in August from 2027 on. At the end of the day, we are a games organisation. And the final point is this. We also have to factor in replays, and we have to factor in Camogie and LGFA, and replays for those as well. So, you know, Croke Park could be very, very busy in that month of August. But that's great. The more of games we can have in it, the better.
It does make you think that once we move back to August, if that were to happen, and say what you take up there is a bit more breathing room between semi-finals and All-Ireland finals, that still wouldn't get rid of the problems that we were talking about last week.
That's literally what I was just about to say.
The provincial hurling championship just being crammed too early. So there are...
We'll always find problems, won't we?
We'll always find problems. We'll always need more breathing room. We'll always need more weeks off. It's not just... They need to prioritise where is the gap, the need for the gap greatest.
Absolutely. And I think there's a load of issues caused by the condensed season and the split season, right? There's also loads of problems that it fixed and loads of things that getting rid of it or stretching on with. Like, so every action has a equal reaction and so on, right? But, equal or opposite. I think this solves one problem, which is just the emptiness of August on the GA calendar. On the national sense, because even I always find the funny thing about it, like, oh, isn't it great for the club championships and all? From a national point of view, like, we're talking about the round robins in the club championship. There's literally no national interest in any GAA at all in August at the moment, which is, it just can't continue, I think. And now, if you were to say, it's interesting you went first and third weeks. So we're going to go back to the gap week between the football and hurling all Ireland.
That's true, actually.
Which I don't know if there's a need for, because I think that there is something to be said for
the momentum.
You know, an August of 4 All-Ireland finals in a row, and you start making more of the LGFA and Camogie Association finals, and you make it a 4 finals in a row, you know, and this is your August Sundays are All Ireland finals.
Go hurling, camogie football, ladies football.
I don't know, but yeah, not possibly. Yeah, I never even thought of kind of like mixing them up a little bit, but yeah, there's certainly something to do for that. But either way, I think it's important that Gaelic Games, say, let's say for now, until it all becomes GAA, kind of in some ways owns the month of August, because there really isn't anything else on the agenda. And I think it would be, I think it would be brilliant, actually better than September, to be honest. I always felt like September, we were hanging on a little bit, you know?
I feel like every time we have this conversation, we have to pull out the caveat. We know why August isn't being used for inter-county games at the moment. We know that there's a backlog. When you go from the provincial championships at club level all the way back to the start of the round robin at county level in Cork and Galway in particular, they feed into and bleed into the month of August, and we know exactly why that is.
This would be a compromise in some ways, right? And it would maintain for, you know, at 28 counties would maintain the current structure. Four would have to push things back a little bit. You know, I don't, like, it's not great. And if that ends up being a dual county, if that ends up being Cork or Dublin, it could cause a lot of, it could cause some issues. But at the same time, I don't think they're unsurmountable issues, you know?
No. What else have you got for us, Cameron?
Well, we've news from Westmead today because they are in the market for a new senior hurling manager today. That's after Saoirse Bolfin stepped down after just a season in charge. The Limerick native made the move from Meath ahead of this season. He guided the Royal County to Christy Ring Cup victory in 2023. While this season, Westmeath were relegated from Division 1B of the Allianz League, but secured their Joe McDonagh status for another year with a 12-point win over Kerry in the final round last month.
Okay, as I said, we will be keeping you up to speed on everything that happens in Stade de Luxembourg as well throughout the evening. It's a 7:45 kickoff.
Just on that, I just said I'd better tune in for some pre-match analysis on the host broadcaster, our national broadcaster, of course. And I'm really enjoying this episode of The Simpsons where Marge is a journalist, I think, and has an angry editor. Yeah. So you were really getting the build-up in.
Is this not Luxembourg, Ireland?
No, not yet. Okay. Not yet. No, apparently they're not on air till 15 minutes before the game. Now, I know it's a friendly with Luxembourg, but it's not as if, like, they're literally showing The Simpsons. You know, it's like, I can understand. No, but I can understand people say, it's like, you know, oh, look, I mean, we've got a very important show that we have to, you can't, it's a friendly, and isn't it great that we're showing it at all? But, like, you know, I think you could probably get away with not showing The Simpsons at 6 o'clock.
Like,
at 7 o'clock.
Do you need 45 minutes build up for a friendly against Luxembourg?
It's not that you need it. I mean, is there not? Are you telling me there's nothing to talk about?
To be devil's advocate here, on behalf of all the Simpsons fans out there,
I don't know.
They're screaming at the radio.
Yeah, season 34 banger.
I know you're doing devil's advocate, but I think it does show you the level of what, like, in back in the day. And I'm not saying that we have everything. You can just replace Giles Dunphy Brady with Bill O'Hurley, right? That's not possible, and they have to do something different. And I can completely see that. I'm not being obtuse about it. I'm not being, you know. But it shows you the level that, like, a game against Luxembourg would have been the perfect opportunity to put them on for 45 minutes, because the match itself would have been an irrelevance, and whatever the big story of the day, whatever the thing they had to get their teeth into. Don't forget that, like, the Roy Keane, you know, rant, whatever you want to call it, the fight, the run away with the young one.
Quarrel.
Argument all happened before a Champions League game between Liverpool and someone, and they never even talked about the match before it. Yeah. They talked about the story of the day.
We could be watching.
I just think, like, we could be watching. Where is that? Where is that passion?
We could be watching Irish football legends getting libelled right now. We could be watching pens get flung across the room, and instead we're being served up season 16 of The Simpsons.
No, like, yeah, exactly.
Season 8,
like,
that would be, like, this, exactly. We wouldn't it's be having
even,
this conversation.
Not even classic Simpsons.
Do you have time for one more story, Cameron?
We'll run through some of the other results from today, because Ireland are not the only team in senior international friendly action tonight. Northern Ireland are taking on Iceland at the same time, 7:45, while England face Senegal at the City Ground in Nottingham. The under-21s were also playing today. They finished scoreless with Qatar in Croatia. And Republic of Ireland international Izzy Atkinson has been released by Crystal Palace today. The 23-year-old joined from West Ham, moving to the Eagles along with fellow Ireland star Abby Larkin in January of 2024. But she made just 4 appearances in the WSL last season, culminating in Palace suffering relegation.
All right, Cameron, thank you for that. We're going to be speaking to Brian Dowling, who is Kildare Hurling Manager, next. Before that, it's time for the Cash Machine.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.